Hey, listeners, welcome to Two Black Guys with Good Credit, the show for the financially curious and the financially knowledgeable. Today, it's all about the power of financial literacy, what we like to call the 1-2 punch.
Yes.
And I have here with me the lovely Dion, the lady with the cold hard stats and facts.
Hi, everybody.
But we have a special guest, another black guy with good credit, not Arlington, not Derek, but we have Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams on our show today.
Nice to be here, and I guess that I'm representative of the symbolic black guy because this is a beautiful young lady, so she's not one of the black guys.
Absolutely not. You are that black guy today with good credit. And we are here to talk about financial literacy and what Brooklyn is trying to do to make it a permanent thing with young people. So without further ado, we're going to let Matt take it away to commercial so we can get this show started. It's Financial Literacy, the 1-2 punch, good people. Listen in. Matt, take us away.
This sponsorship break is brought to you by Clean. Clean is a financial literacy program designed to educate youth in a fun and interactive way through class lessons, workshops, and web seminars. To bring it to a school or organization near you, please visit www.financiallyclean.com.
Black guys.
Welcome back to the show, Two Black Guys with Good Credit, the show for the financially curious and the financially knowledgeable. Like I just said, we have our honorary black guy with good credit, Borough President Eric Adams, today on the show, and we're talking about financial literacy, the 1-2 punch. So, without further ado, we're going to get into the questions. Borough President, are you ready?
Yes, I am. Good, great to be here. And this is a popular conversation for me. It's one of the first things I started here at Borough Hall is to really engage people in financial literacy. And it's something that elected officials normally won't really go into this area and this space. Because if you were to do an analysis, a lot of elected officials are going through financial crises as well. And I have communicated with some notable public figures who you see every day wearing Brooke Brothers suits and driving fancy vehicles and nice shoes, red bottoms and nice bags. But they talk about that they are one or two paychecks away from crisis. And, you know, even so during a public advocate race, Jumaane Williams is one of the best elected officials that we have in the city, but he was going through some personal financial crises around some of his properties. And even the Attorney General, Letitia James, during previous days, she was having some issues with her home and her mortgages. And so you can go official after official, and you'll see that, you know, public life can be private despair when you have financial trauma.
A certain top official, I heard, writes off over $150 million in debt every year. So, I mean, it's a problem, and it's good to say that you share that with us because I'm sure people listening from the outside looking in, you wouldn't think that politicians are going through the same thing that the everyday person is as far as managing their bills and paying their bills on time and maintaining good credit. So is there any advantage by being a politician when it comes to credit or anything like that? Does it help you in any way, get you through any doors, or it's the same as anybody else?
Same trauma. You know, you walk to a bank, you know, Citibank or Chase, and you try to get a mortgage. They're looking at your credit score. They're not looking at your election scores. Wow. They could care less if you won 70% of the vote. The question is do you have a credit score that is 7 or 8 or a high credit score? Because if you don't, it impacts you in many ways, and many people are not connecting the dots. Credit scores can impact your employment, if you're going to be hired or not. It impacts on how large your interest rate could be on your vehicle. It just impacts you so many ways on how credit scores are used.
Wow, so it sounds like it's a personal thing with you, which is good, and I can feel the passion. We know that you are Brooklyn all the way, originally born in Brownsville, right?
Yes.
like I said, our listeners are come from all over the world. So those that don't know you, just like give us high level few things about you yourself that you'd want to share with the world.
Well, Brooklyn is the third largest city in America with 2.6 million people. And And it is an extremely diverse place where 47% of Brooklynites speak a language other than English at home. And we have the largest population of so many different groups. We're the largest Caribbean diaspora throughout the entire globe. We have the largest Jewish population outside of Israel, one of the largest Chinese and Asian population, one of the largest Russian-speaking population, communities from Pakistan, Yemen, all over the globe is right here in the borough of Brooklyn. And probably the only common denominator is the challenge around finances. You know, so although we come from different places on the globe, we all sit at the same place when we talk about economic despair. I started out my public life in the police department. I was a captain. I retired as a captain and ran for state senate. I was elected to state senate. And then after 7 years in as a legislator, I became the borough president of Brooklyn as the first person of color to be the borough president in Brooklyn.
Well done. I will say it was a very proud moment for Financially Clean to stand with you at your press conference last month, Financial Literacy Month, when you announced your bill to actually make financial literacy a permanent part of the high school curriculum, something that we had originally envisioned when we first launched our nonprofit. Can you share with the nation, the world, what this bill is really about?
It's about information, and it's almost alarming that we're having a conversation about having to pass a law to have young people learn about financial literacy, something that would probably impact our lives more than any other area. When you look at, being financially healthy and physically healthy will have a greater impact on the quality of life of a person. If you cannot pay your bills, which we find, which is very interesting, 40% of New Yorkers have a sufficiency deficit. It means that they don't have the amount of income that would allow them to have their basic needs, food, shelter, clothing. 40%. It's not only low income. We're not talking about people who are the messengers or making minimum wage. We're talking about teachers, firefighters, law enforcement, doctors. Because if you live in a certain community and you're paying an overwhelming amount of your money to rent, God forbid if you have a student loan, or if you have children who you have to pay for school and food. And when you do an analysis, we're finding that going and attending soup kitchens and food pantries, they are middle-income New Yorkers because they're not managing or they're going through some type of financial crisis. And so this bill is saying, let's start out young. I believe we should go back to elementary school and teach children based on their level of comprehension, but we should start having conversations around money. What is a credit card? What are interest rates? What are high interest rate cards? What does it mean to pay down a minimum amount on a credit card and how much you pay after 15, 20 years? And what does it mean to pay cash for something? What is a savings account? How do you save for college? All of these conversations are important, and we have to ask ourselves, where are people learning it?
Let me just piggyback on what you're saying, because Deanna and I ourselves, with our program Financially Clean, we were fortunate enough to teach all through New York City. And we've taught in your back door in Brownsville. And we taught at Jefferson High School. And, it's amazing to see the transition in these kids, because our program is a 12-week program because we're trying to make a change. We're not just in and out in one day. So they're going home, asking questions to their parents, reiterating stuff. And you can see they're learning. You see the mind clicking. And you can see, we've taught kids that, quote-unquote, are call themselves boosters or scammers. And you can see that, wow, I can make money legal. I can do things legal. And how credit can help me and how I can develop and how I can grow. And the questions they come back with and the interest. And I've even had one principal ask me, you've never had problems with any kids at Jefferson? I said, I've been teaching financial literacy for almost 4 years. And I've yet to have a bad student. Class is quiet. Cell phones are down. Kids are paying attention because they want the information, and it's unbelievable, and it's finally taken us to 2019 for someone like yourself to now say, let's make this a permanent fixture, because I think it's really just them kids not having the information. Once they have the information, it's mind-changing, it's life-changing, it's community-changing, so I applaud you once again for doing this, because I see it firsthand, the effect of financial literacy with these young people. And saying that you want to start off with young people is where it should start. And, you know, people have always tried to pull us into being like a credit repair program. And that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to be proactive when it comes to credit, just like what you're trying to do. So for all those listeners, it really has an effect and really makes a change. So once again, that's why I wanted to interview, because I'm literally applauding you for taking on this initiative.
And you just, you know, you really have it right, and you hit it out the park when you're doing analysis, and that is why we're calling on the State and Assembly to just hold hearings and move this bill forward. Leroy Comrie, who's a good friend of mine, and Assemblyman Daniel Rosenthal are really pushing this bill, and it's going to allow students to learn financial planning, budgeting, borrowing, interest rates, personal insurance policies, and what's the impact of all of these items. Now, we're not new. Unfortunately, New York is late to the game, because you have several states that have already required personal finance course to be taught at graduate high school. So we're saying you're not getting out of high school until you learn how to manage the money when you get out. And so, you know, hooray to those states like Alabama, Missouri, Tennessee, Utah, and Virginia. So we need to be on the forefront of this conversation. This is a real issue when you look at how finance can really traumatize and remove the quality of life. When you have a conversation with individuals who are married, and you ask them to participate in a survey, they point to finance as one of the top tensions that they have in a household. So we're really impacting the quality of life.
Absolutely. I'm actually curious, because you had mentioned, you know, where are we learning this stuff? Who are we talking to? So I'm actually curious, for you growing up, you know, what was the biggest influence for you? Either was it words of wisdom? Was it, you know, modeling after your parents? Where were you influenced, and how did you learn about personal finance?
And that's very interesting. My mother was always a person who knew how to eke out a dollar, you know, and I'm amazed that, you know, she just knew the basic understanding coming from the South, that it was always important to own a home, and she focused on that. But my credit would have been destroyed if it wasn't for, you know, a shorty in my life.
They always say, behind every good man is a good woman. Yeah.
You know, but
shout out to the shorty. You're listening. I know you're listening.
We're the gift that keeps on giving, you know?
And I remember she would, you know, back when I was a rookie cop, because I had no real understanding, you know, when I got the bill in the mail that said it was late, I was sort of like, you know what, you get the money when I send it to you, you know, so what, you're upset. And she would say, listen, you're going to mess up your credit. And she would actually mail in the check for me, because she said, I don't want you to have bad credit. Later in life, you're going to want to buy a home. And I had no idea, you know, about this whole conversation about credit scores. I had no idea about, you know, needing a strong score when you go to, you know, purchase a home. And later, when we purchased a co-op together, the two of us, and I had to go to Citibank for my first mortgage, and the first thing they asked when I sat down was, you know, hey, how's your credit score? And I looked over at her and smiled, because she was dead on.
What'd you say? I see you.
You know, but imagine if I didn't have her to show me that, then I would not have been able to purchase that co-op that led to using it as a down payment to purchase my brownstone, that led it to purchase an additional property. You know, so the foundation of my ability to acquire some form of institutional wealth for my family was based on the conversation of someone that knew the intelligence about credit.
And you touched on something that's really key to generational.
Yes.
Generational.
Yes.
That's a great story, actually. I can say personally, I had a single mom who had come from the Caribbean, didn't know anything about the credit system, and the one thing she told me was, always have a roof over your head and pay your bills on time. That was the extent of it. So the fact that you had someone in your life, that you're very fortunate, because a lot of us don't have that. You know?
And they don't. And you know what? We wear our wealth on our backs, on our cars. And, you know, I am telling you, you would be surprised how many folks you think have their life together. And then you take a peek at their credit or their savings or their retirement, and it will blow you away.
Well, I have a rule of thumb in New York. I don't rate anybody till I see where they're living. I've seen some guys. I remember I had a good friend who I won't name, but his brother managed one of the top hotels in New York City. Had on the best suits. We had champagne service every time we went out to the club. And the bouncer let him in, and his house was his brother's couch. I mean, that was his.
Not a drop of a lie.
So I'm with you on that. And you know, and we all have inspirations like your story. My mom, unfortunately, never really saw the advantage of owning. We grew up in government housing, but when she did, was always pushed. Paying bills on time, and right. we really extended our. She kept our fridge full and our house fully furnished to the part of the social work. In her head, the social worker was jealous of us, because we had everything going on. She was so the social worker come our house was spotless. So, but she used credit to do that. I don't want to know what interest rate she was paying at the time, but she right. was using credit to provide for us and to provide shelter for us. So, her always paying bills on time was what kept me, good in the credit game.
Yeah, I had a good friend who purchased a car, and he purchased the car, took out the interest or the credit that the car dealer connected him with. 5 years deep, and, you know, he's talking about he went to purchase a home, and he said, you know, Eric, my credit score was low. Do you know why? I said, well, why don't you bring your credit report? Let me look at your payment. First of all, he was his leverage of credit to debt was so high. And 5 years of paying for the car, he realized that he only paid $3,000, you know, on the actual cost of the car, of a $37,000 car. He was so busy paying this high interest rate car. And I said, you know, you're going to be paying for this car. You might as well purchase a Rolls Royce.
It's that amongst African Americans, our number one asset is a car, and that's a depreciating yes. asset. And to be taking so much energy into owning that is an amazing thing. And it's just a mindset that, once again, through what we're trying to teach with the young adults, can make that shift, that change. Because, you know, I do have a car, but, you know, my tenants pay for my car. That's how I look at it. And that's what we try to show these kids, too, in our program, is that, hey, you can have all the great things in life, but, you know, there's a way in which to build and do it, and how credit can help you do that. Like, nobody's trying to tell you to go out life being conservative, being cheap. It's just about doing things strategically.
So true. And you, if you make the sacrifices on the front end, you could have all those benefits on the back end. Exactly. I went without on the front end because I said I wanted to build a level of comfortable wealth that I can do some of the things on the back end, and it has paid off.
Well, yeah, it's true, and you don't really see it. I mean, I know these young people think that, you know, 50 or 40 is this age that dinosaurs live in, but one day when you get there and if you lay the foundation properly, you will see all the benefits and how easy the road will be from then on.
Yes, delayed gratification is a powerful thing.
It really is.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had mentioned the 5 states that are actually doing it well.
Mm-hmm.
Of the 45 states that do include personal finance in their K-12 curriculum. So it's kind of shocking, isn't it, that only 5 are really getting a passing grade, however. And that was according to a report that was done by Champlain College Financial Literacy Center.
Mm-hmm.
And why these 5 states stood out, and that was, as you said, Alabama, Missouri, Tennessee, Utah, and Virginia, was because they actually implemented certain things, like you said, standardized testing. They actually made it a required class and not just, you know, kind of feeding it into other, you know, class like economics or what have you. So just out of curiosity, what do you envision for New York's program that you feel will really create a stronghold here and really empower our youth?
I think age-specific course curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at the age and you figure out at what age they should be learning various skills. And this is well thought out already. We know when a child's in pre-K what they should learn when a child is in first, second, and third. Attached to the curricula that exists should be financial literacy, What should they be learning at, you know, in pre-K, first, second? So it should be already built into their mindset and their thinking. You know, what does it mean to purchase a home? What does it mean? What should the mortgage be? Those different scenarios, doing vignettes and conversation and role-playing. Hey, you are a banker. You know, why didn't you give little Johnny that house? Well, little Johnny was owing such and such credit cards. Now you starting to build it into your everyday interactions, you know, doing comparative analysis of a little Bob spent X amount of dollars on a car, and he now wants to purchase such and such, but this is how much he makes. You know, when you do those real role plays, it becomes real for children, and then repeat them over and over again so they could understand the principles of it.
Wow, well, there's a great program I know that does something similar. There's a 12-week program called Financially Clean that I think we could create a great marriage here. Okay, once again, I know you're from Brownsville, and this has always been my thing. This is what inspires me to keep pushing financial literacy down and never give up on it, is because, you know, I always tell people, you know, close your eyes and just imagine how different do you think Brownsville, Brooklyn would look, or any, you know, challenging community in that part, if everybody in that community had good credit? How would that community look once you educate and inform people? I mean, I think a lot of work, politicians, a lot of your job would be a lot easier, from policing, from, you know, home ownership, from taking care of the community, because once people gather this knowledge that we're trying to teach, I think it changes the mindset.
Right, right, right. And also it also changes your disposition. You go from not living in a state of emergency. When we look at the overwhelming number of people who can't handle a $400 emergency that will come up in their lives, you know, and you know, those who just have a total bleak outlook of their economic future, well, particularly the millennials, you know, our young people. You know, the instant lifestyle is also the instant economics. And not, it's amazing how intelligent we are, but we don't focus on those things that have a great impact on our lives.
You'll do one instant gratification. My son doesn't want to work at my store. He just wants to sell stuff on StockX. I honestly believe, too, like even in low-income neighborhoods, like social programs were originally designed as bridges. You know, and now they're just dependency, lifelong passed on skills, you know, to the next generation and so forth. So I think with financial literacy, again, I think social programs would be reduced and the cost of those would be lessened because people would realize, yeah.
And you're right. Social programs should be bridges, not foundations that you live on, right, and you continue to hand down from generation to generation. And the name of the game, if we use social programs correctly, then they will be available for those who are in high needs, and you can move on to the next step, use it as a ladder. And that's not what we're doing.
Right, right.
We're actually leaving our, when we pass away, in terms of inheritance, we're actually leaving negative.
Exactly. So, well said. Yeah, well said. So,
and how different do you think, I know you were a police officer 22 years, how different do you think if some of the people that, you know, people that were incarcerated or you may have arrested, they were financial literacy, do you think it would make a difference in far as arrest rates and so forth?
And it should be something, those who are incarcerated, there's no reason we can't have financial literacy programs while you're inside.
Absolutely.
You know, because when you get out, you're going to have to, you know, balance your check account. You're going to not do the acts that put you in the first place. You know, the importance of teaching people how to manage their money and how to use their money correctly is something that a society should have part of their everyday interaction. And it's really, it's alarming that those who are making the decisions, they are slow on understanding how important it is that those who are getting paid and living from paycheck to paycheck, learning the process of paying yourself first, putting away, I don't care if it's a dollar. Some people say, well, you know, I have nothing to put away. Well, let's try a dollar a week. That's $50 a month.
You know, yes, yes.
I mean, $50 a year, $52 a year. So It's about really rethinking and changing the paradigm of what money is and how it impacts your life.
You talk to young offenders, and, you know, once again, mind-blowing for them, questions they ask, the inspiration that they got, you know, and how good, how they felt that they can make something, they can do something. And although they had their past, that there's a still a bright future ahead of them if they manage and play the game right.
So true, so true. And it's about creating optimism. And when you take an examination, how people are optimistic about their financial future. And, you know, here in America, only 16% of Americans between the ages of 18 to 26 are very optimistic. They're overwhelming. When you look at it, we're talking about 84% are not optimistic at all. And that's alarming, because if you don't see a future, then you don't believe in the future and you don't believe in yourself in the process.
There, you don't realize just how much, as you said, trauma, how much emotional, how much emotion is attached around finance.
Right. It should be from the cradle.
Yeah.
From the cradle on, you know, we did a great initiative, Councilmember Traeger and I, in 2017. We pushed past a bipartisan law at helping parents prepare for the future college expenses. We had our bill would require the health department within 3 months of a child's birth to distribute financial planning and college saving plan materials for the parents and guardians of the child. I don't know what I would have done. My son went to American University. The tuition for the school was $54,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And I was a lieutenant at the time. And, you know, I don't know too many lieutenants that could write a $54,000 a year check, you know. But because I did the college savings plan, I saved up enough to pay an entire tuition semester. And it just helped a lot because that allowed me to always be one step ahead. So all I had to do was really be ready for the next semester. I was already one semester ahead, and I just had to just continue to save to catch up. And he was able to graduate from college debt-free.
That's such a competitive advantage. I mean, it's such a competitive advantage to be able to.
You know,
when you know that
you're at zero.
Outside of mortgages, right now, student loan debt is the number one form of consumer debt. So kudos to you, Dad.
Right.
I remember the day I was worth zero. I was like 31 years old. I was like, I am at zero. I paid off. I was so happy. Imagine being 24 or 25 and being at zero is a gift. That's a great gift.
Really, and I believe Obama, I don't know when he became senator or president, one of the two, he just paid off his college.
Well, in the meantime, Borough President, while you work on getting this ever so critical bill passed, we know that 2/3 of parents are reluctant to talk about personal finance at home. That's according to a T. Rowe Price survey. What would be the one thing you would say to parents right now?
Don't be ashamed. It's an E.T. moment. They are not alone.
You got to say the millennium what E.T. means, okay? Extraterrestrial, the movie. If you haven't seen it, it's in 1980. People come, kids are like, what?
You know, it was Steven Spielberg.
Yes, for those who don't know.
No. Great movie to watch.
But it's really the signature quote in that movie was, you're not alone. And they should feel that way. They're not alone. You know, this is a problem that is pervasive throughout the entire country. And to start every day, take 1 week and say, this week I'm going to learn about a particular topic. And then actually introduce it, implement it into your lives. Give your son or daughter a quarter and say, you need to out of that quarter, 5 cents of that quarter, you're going to put away as a savings. The other 20 cents, you're going to figure out how you're going to do something that's going to help you make money out of that 20 cents. And let them start doing little things, having a paper route, Kool-Aid stand, right, shoe shine box.
Back in the day.
We put up our son had a lemonade stand in Clinton Hill, and he was selling really lemon and water for $3 a glass. He was making $200. Every time he lost his phone, he had to set up a lemonade stand. For those people that don't know, Brooklyn is a great borough to set up a lemonade stand because these people pay $3 for water and lemons. So he was amazed at how much money he could make in a two-hour time period.
And we don't do that. I remember when my son was he's doing his master's now. And, you know,
are you helping with that one? Or he's on his own?
The one that left American University, he's now doing...
Are you helping that tuition, or he's on his own?
No, I'm helping him with it, but at the same time, but I told him that, you know, I do the first year, and the rest is on you, wow. You know? And he thought he was going to, you know, be the ball president's dad. I said, no, you're going to wait tables? Right. And because it builds character.
Absolutely.
It builds character, and, you know...
Like you have entitlement issues.
You know,
that's a whole other conversation.
And as you stated, you build institutional wealth. You know, I only have one child, so all that I have is going to be turned over to him.
All your energy's there.
And I don't want him blowing, you were going to inherit a $1 million-plus brownstone, and you can't maintain the payment. That's what happens often.
So absolutely.
Right. Yes.
Right. So true.
Well, thank you for that. Powerful. Sean?
So I'm going to put you on the spot, but first of all, I want to say, for those that haven't come to Borough Hall, it's a beautiful building, and you should take note of it. I think it's one of the oldest political buildings in Brooklyn, if not the oldest building.
Yes, it is. The oldest governmental building in Brooklyn. Absolutely. It used to be the City Hall of Brooklyn.
Exactly, and for those that are visiting New York, you should make this part of your tourist tour to come and check it out. With that being said, we've had a number of conversations of teaching free financial literacy classes to not only the people of Brooklyn, but to anybody in New York City that wants to attend. So I'm asking you, when and how can we make this a reality?
Let's do it. Tell us, Sandra Chapman, who's here, she's made this her calling, my chief programming officer, and we should definitely connect with you and Sandra so that we can make it a reality. We have been in several schools. We have partnered with several banks, and we would like to continue to expand that. This is an important issue for us here at Borough Hall.
So I can put you down and say it's happening. We're going to be teaching free classes for the public to come and attend, right?
Yes, you have this space, you can use it, and we look forward to the partnership.
You heard that, he's committing, okay.
Thank you, sir. Now, Borough President, before we go,
yes.
What's next?
Oh, City Hall. Everyone knows that my aspiration is to be the mayor of the city, to make this a financially sound city, and implement real programs as we specifically deal with the financial literacy conversation, that there's some things that we could do in City Hall. I have yet to hear any of the mayors talk about financial literacy. I have yet to see them roll it out as their campaign and have it part of their real conversation. You know, outside of Mayor Bloomberg, who was a businessman that even looked at finance lightly, but why don't we have a citywide agenda around financial literacy? And that is my goal. And there's a process to get into City Hall. You have to get your message out to as many people as possible. We're going through that process. But my goal as a police officer to one day serve this city as a chief executive, and we're moving towards that, God willing, in 2021, we will make it happen.
All right. Well, thank you for being the catalyst in that space.
Yes.
We wish you the utmost on your campaign. We're excited to watch. Where can the people find you? Where can they follow you?
Well, they can, if you go online and Google me, we have a great Borough Hall website. It's www.brooklyn.com. I'm looking at it now, brooklynusa.org, www.brooklyn-usa.org. And you just find out a lot of material on what we're doing. But we're easy to Google. If you Google Eric Adams, Brooklyn Borough President, it's a fine way to keep in touch with us. And you're also we're on Instagram and we're on Twitter. So okay. We're out there in the social media universe, and as well as Facebook.
Awesome. Give them your handle.
The best way to get that handle is to Google.
You sound just like me. Well, my brother from another mother, it's been a pleasure having you on our show. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you.
And thank you, Borough President, and for all your staff for making this happen. And as we say in Two Black Guys with Good Credit, You are financially knowledgeable, and you have been certified as a black guy with good credit.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, good people. This is Sean from Two Black Guys with Good Credit, and you just listened to our most recent episode with Borough President Eric Adams, myself, and the lady with the facts, Dion, discussing the importance of financial literacy. Guess what? We are finally able to confirm the dates for our free financial literacy workshop series. The dates are August 13th. We will begin the classes from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. and it'll go for 8 weeks until October 1st. The classes will be held at Borough Hall. For those that don't know, Borough Hall is located downtown Brooklyn, and every single train line gets you there. The classes will be great. Regardless of your situation, it will only help you excel in life and help get your financial business in order or help boost your financial situation. So please come out, bring friends, family, and even your kids. I hope to see you there. Like I said, the classes begin August 13th. If you need more information, please do not hesitate to reach out to me. You can reach out to me directly on Instagram, which is Financially Clean Sean, and Sean is spelled S-H-A-U-N, or you can email me directly at slinda@financiallyclean.com. That's S as in Sam, LYNDA@financiallyclean.com. Can't wait to see you guys there. I'm super excited. Have a blessed day. See you soon.
KnickKnackDirect.com is a fast, easy way to shop online. To buy an item from any U.S. website, just go to KnickKnackDirect.com. That's NICNATDirect.com. Choose your method of payment and we'll ship, handle duties, and deliver your item straight to your door. I'm Sean of KnickKnackDirect.com, and you have my word. KnickKnackDirect.com.